Welcome to Biggest Geekess. We're your hosts. I'm Randy.
And I'm Joe.
This is episode 184 of the show, and the date is Tuesday, March 26th, 2024. So I'm as old as you now, Joe. I hope you're happy.
Yeah, I am. I'm very happy about you being as old as me.
You elder worm, you.
Right, so there was a comment here. Thanks for everybody for showing up. Flint Fireforge, Iron Man, Patrick Demo, Martinson. Who else is in here? I think that's it.
Darth. Darth is in the house, and so is Arn. Did you say Iron Man?
I said Iron Man.
Don't forget the Iron Man.
Let's see. Let me do this. Yes, so someone posted right before we started in the live comments, which you can do if you're listening after the fact, which you can do by coming here live.
Right.
7:30 every Tuesday. So he commented about Pete.
Yes.
And you know, it took the entire session to deal with the dragon.
It did.
So, and then we had to run again. So
I really liked how Blackwall said, well, you can fight a smaller dragon or an even bigger one. Oh, what a great choice. Oh, goodness. He'll be here.
Flint, I think that Elle is waiting for us to remove the live reactions from the chat so people can't, you know, send hearts and stuff to us that we don't see over here on our side.
I don't see them.
StreamYard. But if you're logged into Facebook, it comes through on Facebook, but they don't come through. They don't come through this. Only the comments do. So I think he was waiting. I just did that. So maybe he'll show up at some point.
Hey, Martinson clarified. It seems that we'll have our driver for CabinCon. He's back.
Good deal.
He's going to be there Thursday. Duncan Bradley. What's up, dude?
Hey, you're leaving him hanging.
Oh, fist of power. Oh.
All right.
So we game Friday. That we're talking about that adventure with Blackwall and Horde Wars and the crew. It was a good day to beat Joe. Joe was the rock star, man. He saved our butts.
And, you know, it would have went a tiny bit better if one of the party members had done his job like he was supposed to. At the
Tic-tac.
Very beginning.
Tick-tock, yeah. Tack.
Yeah.
Tim Scott, if you're listening.
It still worked out, though.
Go now.
But it was
I charged and got dropped. It was pretty sweet.
So after the fight, I was looking over my character sheet again. And what saved us at the very end was the fact that my character has a thing called Iron Resolve.
Yes. Oh my God, you'd have been dead.
Yeah, my character would have been dead.
Yep.
Or I would have had to run, and some of my actions I wouldn't have been able to do. And that might have prevented somebody from recovering or something. Who knows? Well, I was looking at it a little closer, and I shouldn't have even needed to roll.
Oh, really?
Because Iron Resolve in Horde Wars gives you immunity to compulsions. And that affected that dragon, the dragon fear.
Yeah.
Or dragon's roar. Yeah, that's roar. Compulsion.
Oh.
So I would have just been straight immune to that crap.
You should have said.
Dragons don't scare me.
They kill me.
My character would have then been there alone. He would have gotten myrtleized. But yeah.
Ultra-American. Look what he's making. That is the weirdest character. Ultra-American. I'm working on a new Horde Wars character. Female, halfling, tavern wench, Viking. What a combo, dude. Halfling. That'll be great.
Female halfling.
Mm-hmm.
Female Viking? That's a bit anachronistic. no matter what the History Channel wants to tell you.
Well, there were females in the Viking clans.
Sure.
They weren't out killing people.
Not generally.
Not generally. Not General Sprecky. But yeah, that was a good time. And as always, my character was one and done. I did one thing, stepped in for the first official round after surprise, and immediately Dragon dropped me like a bad habit. And mostly I stayed on my back. I think I got up once for half a second before I got dropped again.
Really? I wasn't. You didn't do anything else?
I was going to attack. That's right. I was charging, and the dragon went and killed me. And then I got up, and I think I cast a healing spell.
Halfling Vikings fit perfectly into catapults. I'm sure they do.
That would be funny. But yeah, it was a good time. I couldn't believe it. We got the treasure, dude. We made out like bandits.
Oh, yeah.
God, I got a sweet magical weapon. Joe got a relic. So that's like doubly awesome. So
it's a war fan.
Yes. An assassin weapon.
It's an assassin weapon. The base damage is a little bit lower than my normal weapon, but there you go.
Yeah. And I did level up. I mean, for laying them down on the job, I got 4 experience points.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say you should have volunteered your experience points to me, but I think that everybody voting my character the MVP and my character getting an extra experience point in the system got him a bit closer. So we don't have to. Yeah, so even if we do a 3-pointer next time, he'll love it.
I'll have to do a 12-pointer next time. I'll see if we can do a 12-pointer adventure.
I don't know. So what we did was a 4.
Right. I can't imagine anything higher, actually.
That was pretty hard.
That was really hard. No. Martinson, don't be confused. He says, so does this mean Randy will be giving out treasure now since he got a taste of it? No. I tried to clarify last week. See, I like to get treasure as a player. As a DM, I don't ever want to give it out.
Yeah. The two don't meet.
No.
Don't cross the streams, Randy.
Don't cross the streams. But there's DM Randy and there's player Randy. So, yeah. But let me check over here. We got anybody. Nobody on Rumble, even though I said hello to him. I can't blame him. Rumble's a difficult thing to pull off. But, yeah, so it was good. Anything exciting this week for you, Joe?
Rumble, we got last week some feedback.
Oh, okay.
On our episode from last week. Someone made a comment.
Oh, cool.
Let's see. Pause this right.
What is wrong with my hair, dude?
Where are comments? All weird stuff. Adam Meisner.
Yeah.
Said it was a fun watch.
Okay.
Not last week's episode, but the live play.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he has a timestamp. Players planning on the boss takedown tactically is one of the joys of DMing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Especially when you know it's not going to turn out that way.
No. Do all the planning you like, little players.
It's great that it works both ways, though. You know, your DM can plan everything out, and the players will be sure not to do anything that you set up.
Well, sure. I'm sure that most of how the combat went was predicated on a random roll.
Yes.
So it's not like DM Blackwall said, okay, I'm going to have the dragon do this.
Right.
No.
Well, it could have been worse.
We got the best result possible.
We did, because if that dragon had been right wide awake, ready to go, he'd have got a surprise on us trying to surprise him.
Yeah, we would probably all have died. Because it would have been facing the dragon, and it breathes.
Yeah, it would have been ugly.
Very ugly.
I'm getting ready to Google something for... here we go. This is for... I agree. Iron Man says he can't picture a really cool war fan, but I'm going to try to show him one, and I don't know
if I there's been several old kung fu movies where they've had the old master with a fan. Now, that is a nice-looking fan, but I don't think... It doesn't look like it would stand up to the rigors of combat.
No, it doesn't really.
But I'm more picturing a fan that's made of metal instead of one that's made of cloth. But I do remember some old old Kung Fu movies where they had the fan. It was just a regular old fan. And it would, he would, they would just tear people up with it.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, you know, it's a, it's probably more of a fantastical idea. I mean, did people actually use fans as weapons? I mean, I like the fact that you could fold it up and just carry it around as if it's like a normal fan.
I don't know. I know it's a thing in some, especially the older Kung Fu movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, even in Big Trouble in Little China.
Yep.
There was,
Egg
Shen had one that reflected lightning.
That's right. He went, that's right. Yep. Yeah. Our man makes a good point. There is a war axiom. Better to be a fanner than a fanny. It's my fanny. David Gwill agrees. The fans are fantastical. That's okay, though. That'll be cool. Joe will become a Oriental elf. Make everybody mad.
Yes, the war fan is a standard item. So I will still have to swallow my reaction to the because I would say, no, it's not.
Joe's picture.
I imagine the fan is a little bit larger than one that you would just fan your face with.
And it's probably metallic.
It's probably metallic, so it's a bit heavier. But it's still not that big. Mm-hmm. Aww.
Thank you, Flint.
Flint says, I'm their biggest fan. Now, we know that he's talking about us. He doesn't have to say it. He doesn't have to come out.
Don't say it, Flint. We know.
We just know.
Yeah. Iron Man says he's got a hairpin that's a standard item. Joe would love that.
There's a combination of, I mean, it's primarily from the use of it. So if it's a very useful thing, it'll at least be standard. It might even be bulky.
It's the gamey side of the game.
It's the gamey side of it.
And, you know,
don't want you to have that many useful things.
Is there any game that you've ever played where you didn't at least go, that didn't make a lot of sense?
No.
I mean, there's every game. Now, there's probably some folks out there that's played a perfect simulation game of some sort, but not me. So
I can't say every game because some games I've only played once.
Every game I've played.
Yeah. Oh. Armin says it's a bone hairpin, so I picture Wilma Flintstone.
Right on.
Do you, when you take it out to use in combat, do you like fling your hair around? You know, dramatically.
I think Iron Man would look super awesome doing that.
Yeah. I mean, his character might.
No, I think Iron Man would.
Well, I don't know that he has the hair to do the whole flinging around thing after he takes out a hairpin.
Shh! Don't tell anybody. We'll think he has lovely locks. Patty is in the house. What's up, my dude? He needs a war fan to blow the he needs a war fan to blow the wind in his hair. Yes, dude. Sweet. Bring your character to Big Geek Con. I'll have that happen. Joe will fan him while I'm killing you guys with 12 dragons.
Right.
I tell you what, I love Planet of Blackwall because I'm learning all kinds of evil things to do to you guys in Horde Wars when I GM. It's gonna be fun.
Well, if I can bring this character, then I'll just punk all your guys because it's the war fan's bronze. So it does extra damage on monsters. Is that what bronze does? No. Beasts. But it's mercurial, so you get an extra attack with it.
Oh.
And it's enchanted, so it negates all of these absorption abilities.
Oh, that's right.
Like that dragon. Right. The dragon had the iron scales or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Where the very first attack in the round.
It blocked.
It blocks. This would just say, no, it doesn't.
But here's a big question I have for you. How many hit points you got, Joe?
You don't need to know that.
I know it's less than 30.
It is less than 30. 24, so it gets one attack on me, then my character is going to be squished.
Yeah, our man for real. Joe's not kidding. That weapon he got, I get why they call it a relic. In that game, artifacts, for those that don't know, artifacts are just magic items. But right. Relics are like, I think they're super... BA,
they have a couple extra abilities, like
I got a sweet Morning Star. Mine was pretty good. I think mine's not mercurial. I think it's just silver. Very happy to get it though.
So a relic magic item is just an artifact. I also pulled a silver mercurial pike. So that's considered an artifact. But the relic.
You gave that to Tic Tac, though, didn't you? Didn't Tic Tac get that?
Yes. Yeah. And so it has it. The artifacts seem to have an extra designator.
Yeah.
In it.
Oh, mine is enchanted as well. So mine will bypass absorption and the other one, displacement.
Right.
So yeah, we're ready, man. We are like loaded for bear now, ready to kick some butt.
Except our hit points.
Our 20 something hit points. I'm just going down left and right there.
Because when he said, okay, I just rolled the damage from, he rolled the fire breath damage and it was 30.
Lightning breath.
Sorry.
Yes, it was 30. Mm-hmm.
30. I don't think anybody in the party has 30 hit points.
The closest I think would be Brian's orc. He might have 28.
Yeah.
It would have killed anybody, yeah. So, anyway. Okay, so that was our fun day. I had nothing exciting this week other than playing last Friday, D&D. I'm supposed to play Saturday. Mr. Larry, I hope, will make it, but he's traveling today. Mr. Elliott, and we may have a game of Minders this Saturday. I probably should write the adventure. That would be pretty good. Or just wing it. Get a bunch of random tables. Wing, wing, wing. Oh, Patty asks, rough fight. How did it end? We survived. I think Joe was the last man standing. Did you kill it too, didn't you, with a flare?
No, actually, I wasn't the last one. It was I was one of the last. I'm pretty sure.
We were completely beat down like scum buckets, Patty.
I think there was two of us standing.
That dragon worked us, but tell you what, we got treasure beyond imagining. So,
I think it was Larry's character hit it really hard. He might have done as much or more damage than Mike.
He did 40 something damage with that
critical. One hit.
Yeah, with that one critical. He just
He knocked the dragon down to one hit point.
Yes.
Right. And then I finished it off.
Yeah.
I mean, after a lot of attacks, it finally came down to him. His attack, it had one hit point left, and then me.
All right. Well. You got any gaming plans this weekend coming up, Joe?
No.
Okay.
Working.
All right.
I was supposed to be off today, but ended up getting called in.
Bummer. So you're back at it tomorrow, normal schedule?
Normal schedule, yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we slide into the main topic tonight? You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Hirelings and henchmen, are they just tools of the trade, or are they just tools? And by that, I mean sucky tools, not the good tools. You're a tool.
Well,
man.
If you mean by tools that they just do what we tell them.
Yep.
Yeah. They can be. It all depends.
What's up, GM Johnny? I feel like I know that guy. I know he's been on here before.
Yeah.
All right. So did you get to read that article I sent you?
I did.
Cool. And what's your... I thought it was pretty good.
Well, I don't think I learned anything new out of it, but it was a reminder, a refresher on some of the older things like retainers and things like that. Yeah.
That's the thing, Flint. Yes. Cannon fodder.
They can be used like that.
They can. So a hireling is meant to be according to that article, a non-player character that provides some service to the player characters for payment.
Right. So you hire them to do a thing, like make you a sword or a potion or if it's a sage, you hire them to find information for you. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think he stressed a lot, and I'm going to pull up the article here a little bit. He stressed a lot the idea of the hirelings you pay to do something. And they can be, if you look at that list, hirelings can be like mercenaries, right? So they could fight for you, but they're not nearly as loyal, right?
Yeah, their loyalty is your coin.
Yeah.
You're loyal to the coin.
Right.
Initially, a lot of games have rules about how many hirelings and henchmen and stuff, followers you can have. A lot of versions of D&D had different things. I prefer that to be more of a between the DM and the player kind of deal.
I do too. I understand it gave a reason for charisma to matter. I mean, a significant reason.
Yeah.
Because if you can have a bunch, like he talks about later on in the article, how in first edition, there's some people that interpret the henchman rule. Say you have a charisma high enough to get six henchmen. If three of your six henchmen die, then you can only have three for the rest of your career. That seems weird to me.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't be able to get more. So I've never been inclined to use those rules, but I do understand why they're there, why they are there. I do like the penalty to interaction though for charisma. That's good, or advantage or whatever.
Right. I can see the maximum having a maximum number of followers because based on your charisma, only so many people are going to follow you around.
Yeah. I like this definition of a henchman too. A henchman's a better grade of hireling. While money may still be a motivating factor for them, they're more permanent retainers. And that language got used throughout the edition, retainer, follower, henchman. Those kind of got merged after a while.
Yeah.
In my mind, I never thought they were really that different. Patty makes a good point too. If you lose hirelings, word gets around. Yeah.
Right. If everybody you take out with you on your sojourns, that you don't come back with any of them, mm-hmm. people might want to, you know, stay away from you.
Yeah. Flint makes a good point. In reality, it was a great reason for players to spend their money. And Joe, now we haven't played in a while, they're about fifth level characters. Those two Rangers you had, they're kind of, I think even though they were kind of hirelings, I feel like they're becoming more like henchmen, right?
They could be.
I mean, for your cleric, they're pretty, they, I mean, I played them as if, and you did too, as if they were really sticking it. They stuck it out in a couple of really tough fights. So, yeah. I think henchmen have a bond, right? That's what.
Right. I mean, it doesn't have to be like mystical or anything like that.
They tend to like you. You're cool, man.
Yeah.
Clerk's awesome, dude. I'm gonna help him out. And And I think they tend to be more like sidekicks or more like adventuring buddies and stuff. There was a part of the article in there that I wanted to. I'm trying not to drive people crazy with the speedy scrolling, but I want to get to this. Here it is, the Gygax statement I thought was interesting. It kind of intrigued me from the original first edition DM's guide. It says henchmen, whether male or female, are greatly desired by the discerning player. That means it's a good idea to have them. You should want
them. Stop moving back and forth.
Okay. Sorry, I got to read it. Right. Or they usually spell the difference between, I want to make it smaller then.
Yeah, a little bit smaller. Yeah.
They usually spell the difference between failure and success in the long-term view. They are useful in individual adventures as a safety measure against the machinations of rival player characters. Huh. That's a different experience because, I mean, Gygax play with a lot of people, so maybe there was some rivals between groups. And provide strength to the character in his stronghold, and lastly serve as a means of adventuring when the character is unable to. That definitely, that reeks of a certain style of play.
Right, and for anybody who knows more about the history mm-hmm. or has seen more likely the two videos we talked about a few episodes ago.
Yes.
Right.
Dreams in Gary's Basement and The Secrets of Blackmoor.
So it was more so in the Blackmoor mm-hmm. video where this machinations of rival player characters issue came up. And when we were playing back when we were teenagers, we were kind of backstabby too.
We kind of were.
But apparently that was a thing that when you're out as a group in the dungeon, then you're allies. Mm-hmm. And you make sure that that mission happens by supporting each other. But when you're out of the dungeon and you're just out in your domain, your various areas doing your own thing, you know, all bets are off.
Yeah.
So then you might run afoul. My character might run afoul of Randy's character trying to bring all of my whole domain over to his church.
Right.
Right.
Convert and everybody.
Like, you stop all that over there.
Right. Because if they follow my faith, then I might have more sway over them than you.
Right. So it seems like that there were more, there was PvP.
There was.
Back in the day.
It does seem like it was from the beginning. Armin made a comment we should clarify. He says, in our D&D-based pirate game, the henchmen work for a portion of the loot, pirate-like. Yeah, and the idea was, hirelings, you say, I'll pay you 2 gold pieces a day to be a shield guy, a shield guard.
Right, and there's no expectation of anything else.
But henchmen are like, I like you, but I'm an adventurer too, and I'm going to work for a portion of the treasure. And I would think henchmen could be, they could be fighters, wizards, clerics, whatever kind of class you could imagine that characters can be.
Yeah, henchmen, retainers, all of these following terms are kind of interconnected. They're all the same.
Yeah.
Henchmen, retainers, and followers. Those are all in the same class.
Hireling's different.
Hireling is like you hire someone as a carpenter to come in and fix your sink.
Correct.
Right? A retainer is like you have a lawyer that you can call any time of the day. None of us do that because that's wicked expensive.
Right.
But you have a lawyer on retainer, and they have your interests are more meshed together.
Yeah. Oh, Flint makes a good argument for why you should have them. In reality, having henchmen and hireling is a great reason for players to spend their money.
Normally, yes, but not in Randy's campaign because we don't get that.
I've never been a fan, but I don't want to go down that road yet. I want to think positive for a while. I think it adds, I don't know, does it, I hear everybody say it adds verisimilitude, so it adds believability. Does it? I mean, a party of 6 characters and 19 followers and retainers, I guess.
I don't care about verisimilitude. I don't care about whether it simulates reality, like you would have this, it makes sense. I just think it's fun. Right?
It can be. Yeah. Fun element.
Yeah, there's a fun element to having, because you're imagining your character not having the time to shine his shoes. So you have a valet, and they make sure all your clothes are good.
You feel like a big shot.
Yeah.
It feels like a big shot.
At some point when your character's the party perhaps has enough extra gold, not in this guy's games, but in normal D&D games, and this applies to D&D.
The regular lower end dungeon masters that give their player characters gold.
Right.
It could work.
Right. Other systems don't have this necessarily. Like 13th Age, you don't get much money.
No.
And the idea of having henchmen and hirelings or followers or any, that's not really part of the game. You might have an animal companion, but that's it.
Ultra American asks, and the article touches on this, are hirelings and henchmen still a thing in 5e? Hirelings exist, but they're more like going to hire a sage to tell you something or a porter to carry your crap, maybe. But they don't really have henchmen. That's not really a discussion in the books. So.
Right. So it's more of a, I don't even think it's connected to anything except the idea of when you're on campaign, you need camp followers so that someone can sharpen your sword, take care of your horse when you're down in the ground facing, you know, lizard men or whatever.
Yeah, especially when you get past the, you know, dirt farmer stage.
Right. So you have enough money, you pay people to take care of your camp. You might even hire people to guard it so you can sleep all night.
Yeah, Joe's going to need one to have, Iron Man says, somebody to polish a fan. Joe's going to need that.
If it's not polished, it won't whip out very well. What else do you say when you
whip it out.
Out the fan?
Whip it out. Yep, you do.
We deploy the fan.
David Will says, isn't it inherently realistic? My wife and kids tend to use them to round the party out since it's just the three of them. Yeah, that's a good reason to use them. If you only have 2 or 3 players, that used to be a thing. We'll have 4 or 5 henchmen, and we're off to the races, man.
And then Flint says, it can. In olden times, didn't big deals travel in posses, right? So if you had a lot of money, you had people, you had porters and whatever you could afford to bring with you. Or if you were visiting somebody, you leaned on their staff to do the things that you would normally have in your own home. But yeah, I would say for the affluent adventurer, which adventurers become in normal campaigns, do become affluent.
Unfortunately, as much as Joe likes to complain, they do become affluent even in mine. Granted, it's not to about 19th level, but they do eventually become affluent.
Yeah. You can hire all kinds of people.
First level fighter. 19th level, hire you a first level fighter companion.
Right. He will carry your sword and then say, have a good time at the adventure, because I'm not going.
Yeah. So given coin, it adds some sort of realism, lets you to be a kind of a big shot. We've named several, and then Gwil said small parties, henchmen can round things out. That's a lot of, can you think of any other advantages?
That's how we use the Rangers.
Yeah. Yeah. You did initially. Right.
We had them so that they could help us trek through the wilderness. I think we were kind of light on fighty types because we had
initially
casters. Yeah.
Well, I think the first time you guys played, you played my adventure, your playtesting, and you guys got smoked the very first time foray into the dungeon, which the big GeekCon guys managed to craftily get around. But I don't know if it was lucky or what, but it was pretty smooth. I told them they avoided the TPK room. And then we rolled the characters back in it again, rinse and repeat. Joe's cleric's brother, also named Fred, comes back. And then you took those Rangers in for more beef, and you managed to make it through.
Right.
So that was still a heck of a fight.
Here's another way to visualize it is with Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. And what was the first one?
Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a henchman.
Yes, he did.
Perhaps a hireling at the very beginning.
Right.
Who ended up kind of, you know, being a little nefarious.
Yep.
And then the other guy, his rival, he had all kinds of all over the place.
Yeah.
Then, but later in the story, he ended up with more. Indiana Jones ended up with he always has a crew around him. It might only be one or two people. It might just be the short little Chinese boy, but he always has helpers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got some legs as far as being something that happens in stories. I think it does have some legs there.
And the androids, the droids in Star Wars.
Yep.
You could consider them to be henchmen.
Short round. Temple of Doom. Yeah, you're right. Martinson says, yeah. Yeah. I think the fun aspect can't be, I overlooked it, but I don't think it can be. I think there is something cool about getting to have those extra characters, especially when Cal's not lying. He says he's always a dirt farmer. So, what if your character goes down? Well, it's nice to have a couple of henchmen because you get to keep playing and acting.
Right.
You know,
and you can have them pull through your body back. Maybe you have an extra potion that they administer to you, or at least they can maybe keep you from bleeding out.
I think those Rangers have helped several party members out a couple of times. So they've been very valuable, even though they're a couple levels behind you guys. Yeah, right. I think I would definitely classify them as henchmen. They're not really hirelings.
Right.
I mean, they're becoming like part of the group. So that would make sense. Any other big time advantages you think for having hirelings and henchmen in your party? I think it does add to the world being, especially the hireling. There would be people that you could hire to scribe scrolls for you. There would be people you could hire to, you know, read books and tell you some lore.
Yeah, even though in a lot of the more modern games, a lot of people, and it's bled from early gaming into video games, and now it's kind of bleeding back into the hobby with crafting. So I know in a lot of your games, we are not usually afforded enough time. Hey, Legion, we're not usually afforded enough time, the characters, to do crafting of any intricate sort. It's usually you go back to town, you get one night of rest, and you have to be back, and you have to go back out, because if you don't, princess is going to die, the world's going to end, kingdom's going to fall, you know, something like that. So
I do like high pressure adventures. That's my preferred way. But I think I should probably learn to let you. I mean, it's my nature too, even on the podcast or on the show, right? I want to, I'm jumping fast from topics. I want things. It's got to happen. Let's make it happen. Let's make it happen. The cool thing. I want the cool thing to happen. I need to stop and smell the roses probably.
Right. So at the same time, though, as a player character, I may not necessarily, as a player of a character, I may not want that character to get bogged down in, you know, building their own house with his own hands.
Right.
Or so you hire people for that.
Well, you got bigger, especially in my campaign, your adventurers got bigger fish to fry than building houses.
And so the idea that you have, you hire people to do these things, to make things, to fix your clothes, to cook for you and all that stuff, it would also kind of maybe take a load off of the game engine some. Because if you use hirelings to do the crafting, then do you really need to have crafting skills? Do you need to have the more mundane skills if you have folks to do that for you?
Well, even an old AD&D and stuff, that's the way I thought it was. I thought characters can't make stuff. They can't build things. Then they brought in second edition. With second edition, when they had the, what was that first edition where they had the
non-weapon proficiencies?
Not even non-weapon proficiencies. It was called
secondary skills.
Secondary skills. Was that first or second?
That might have been. I think they were called secondary in first edition.
Okay. Okay. Flint's got an interesting comment, which leads, I'll do it in a second, but I wanted to talk about the challenges, unless you got more positives you want to say about henchmen and hirelings. I think the fun aspect is awesome. I think that does make sense for them to exist as an option. And I think it's good for domain play or for your character to feel like he's a total BA.
And it can be comic relief if you want that.
It can be.
Like Pink Panther.
Yes.
Right. He had Kato.
Yeah.
And Kato was always kicking the crap out of him because, you know, Pink Panther thought he could do kung fu, but no, or karate, whatever it was.
Yeah. Flint asked a question that's going to lead into the whole idea of, to me, of the challenges. And he says this, what say-so does a DM have with another character's henchman, morale checks, fear, and so on? In my opinion, the DM has all the say-so. And what I'm saying by that is, he's an NPC. He's not a PC.
Right.
Now, I'm not opposed. Like, I don't run the Rangers. Joe gets to run them because I just don't want the headache. That's a drawback to me. That's another drawback. Like, when I, especially in early, late first, early second. Oh, thank you, Legion. I did, and I have forgotten it. Pause, guys. Legion says, you started to send me a Discord message last week but never finished it. If not important, cool. If you meant to, I did mean to, but honestly, I've forgotten. Old man-itis has set in. I was reminded by somebody. I think it was L had told me to send something to you during the podcast, and I meant to, and I'm sorry, but I kind of screwed it up.
And then Legion sent me, posted on Discord to remind you, and then I forgot to remind you.
It's if it comes across to my mind again, I'll do it. It was some article I wanted to send you that I thought you would find interesting, but it may be old news now. I'll search through my old notes, bud, and see if I can find it. I got a lot going on at the house, so I'll see what I can do. But yeah, sorry about that.
Yes, Martinson Green Hornet had Kato, but I'm pretty sure, could be wrong. I might be remembering wrong, but I thought for sure that the Pink Panther called his Chinese servant Kato as well. I could be wrong. It's been a long time since I've seen the ones that they had that. Of course, Pink Panther made today won't have a Chinese manservant.
No, that would be horribly bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking. I ain't got time to look. Right. He did looked it up. Flint says it was the same name. Cool. Yeah, yeah. No problem, Legion. It's all good, man. It's me. I'm sure it wasn't huge, but I want to find that for you. It's just not a huge deal, but I'll try to get to it. So what about playing them? So one of my fears, or my frustrations, and it happened in late first edition, I was using more henchmen. I think Joe was already gone to the military, and we were playing about an 8th or 10th level character, and there was these henchmen between 7th and 8th level, and there was like 4 or 5 of them. I had a big, powerful, very charismatic fighter who was getting all these henchmen following him, and I thought, man, I got to keep role-playing all these guys, and they got to be part of the fight, and I got to do everything. At that time, it just never crossed my mind to let the players play them, because I was like, they're NPCs. They have their own motivations and things. The players would just have them always do something that's great for them. So I think that can be a drawback, but I think to solve that these days, I'm more likely to hand the henchman over to the player and just let them decide a lot of things as long as it doesn't get out of hand. I mean, if his henchman is like always risking his neck to save that character for any little thing or tough situation he gets into, it'd be like, yeah, because henchmen don't have to be your same alignment or focus or belief right. in the world. They could just think you're cool.
Right, right. It's like with Robin Hood. He had his merry men. Mm-hmm. He had, what was his right-hand man?
Little John.
Little John.
Yeah, Friar Tuck was pretty close too.
Right, so they were all different characters. They all had, maybe they had a similar path mm-hmm. or something, but in our games, I would say with any table, the DM has the final say on NPCs, even the hot henchmen and hirelings, mm-hmm. final say. But they probably shouldn't try, like you were saying, probably shouldn't try to run all of them.
No. Patrick says, Kato Fong. That was his name.
Yeah. It's spelled differently. Not K-A-T-O, but C-A-T-O.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's a lot, but it's a lot less burden on the DM if they can count on the player to run all those folks.
Yeah.
And if you have, so in with many versions of D&D, when a fighter hits name level, they attract a body of followers, and they end up with a retainer or someone that's supposed to follow them around. The rest of them are actually supposed to guard his keep.
Right, because you're not supposed to get any followers until you have a keep or some stronghold of some sort.
Right, so you, the majority of that type of follower or retainer or henchman, they stay back. Uh-huh. And then you have your one dude, like in Hercules, the Heroic Journeys or whatever they were called.
Yeah, with what's his face, the Sorbo and his companion.
Sorbo, yeah. So he had his sidekick. So you have one sidekick. The rest of them stay at the keep. But that doesn't say you can't have some henchmen that follow you around that are probably even lower level than that sidekick.
Yeah. How do you, you know, I remember the early days. How do you stop them from just being truly like cannon fodder or trap detectors? Especially hirelings.
So that comes down to whatever you and your players agree to. Because I know we had this discussion mm-hmm. at the table, something similar, when I asked if I could my character could hire a couple of woodland guides. And right. I told you, they're not going to be trap detectives, so we're not going to throw them in front of peril.
Right.
They're going to have specific duties, and if they refuse because they think it's dangerous, then that's fine. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be people that'll do that. They did that in Temple of Evil. Temple of Doom, or no, it wasn't Temple of Doom. It was the Holy Grail.
Holy Grail. By Monty Python?
No. The Indiana Jones movie.
Last Crusade.
The Last Crusade. You know, they were pushing those folks through the traps.
Yes.
And, you know, that's the way evil people treat their henchmen and hirelings. But right. It's kind of a joke with our game.
It kind of is.
It's kind of a joke because that's the way people have done. So it gets around and becomes a thing and people laugh about it.
And someone said earlier, and you know, the truth is there would be consequences in game for that.
Sure.
It would eventually be the word that, look, either no hirelings ever come back with this group or the ones that do tell people, hey, look, man, they made John and Fred go right up there in this stupid trap and they got covered in green slime. You know, these guys are turds. Martinson asks, Randy, would you consider my robot in Deadlands a henchman or a hireling? I'm trying to remember. I thought he was more like part of your character. I can't recall. It's been a while since I've thought about that guy. Closer to a henchman, though.
Angie's got to take a shower.
Hold on a second.
Okay. Anyway, Joe has got to do something there. Also, what about leveling up? If you have henchmen that are with you all the time, even just one, and if he's doing all the adventuring like you are, Like Joe's got a henchman right now. I bet that's Miss Elizabeth, is it?
No, it's actually.
The little one.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, grab it. Grab that little dog. Grab that little dog. Oh, that's just a little one. Okay, that's his minor. That might be a hireling.
We are dog sitting, and my wife needs to take a shower. And we have a really big dog, and we're watching this really little dog, and she wants to make sure that our really big dog doesn't squish the really little dog.
Yeah.
But this is Patches, her cousin's little doggy.
Yeah, I think, but I was asking, what do you think of when you have a henchman that stays with you as they level up? Do you think at some point could the dynamic change between the boss and the henchman? At least a little bit? I mean, what if you're 12th level and he's 11th?
It could. It depends on their personality.
Yeah.
But if you have them so that high level with them, it gets even more of a possibility the higher they go. Mm. If you're 18th and they're 19th.
Yeah.
You're 19th and they're 18th or whatever. You know,
But I just thought of something. If you have them that long, they probably would go from henchman to like an ally, a real friend.
Yeah.
I mean, a real friend, you know? And so like he's a companion. He'd be, and I guess that leads credence to the idea that if someone else's character say, you know, I had a 17th level fighter and I died and you had a 16th level henchman fighter and you've been friends for the long, I could just play him. You know what I'm saying? And it would make a lot of sense. Because he's been adventuring with you since level 5, he's a pretty stalwart companion.
And you know? Even if he is that level, he may not have all of the player characters' advantages.
Correct.
He may still not be as powerful because you might have more gear.
Yes.
You might have more pull with the king. You will likely have more pull with the king or the local established hierarchy or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Depending on the game system, you might have other things that you get that they don't, because they don't take the same. They often don't take the same risks.
No, they don't.
Or whatever. They're looked at as being your sidekick, so that everybody's going to treat them that way. So they're not going to have the same advantages.
I keep coming back to the Rangers because they're the most recent one. The Rangers you have that are your companions, hunters, whatever you call them, the archers. They've been pretty bold and like brave and helpful. So I could see them becoming a part of the group.
Yeah.
Like people just thinking them like, yeah, they're henchmen, but they get henchmen tend to get a portion or a share of the loot, not the full share.
Right.
But eventually, I mean, I guess you could say, yeah, they probably could, but I think their treasure would be a little less, but, yeah, that'd be kind of interesting, actually, to think about having a... That'd be neat to have a henchman from, like, level 3 all the way to, like, level 20. That'd be pretty cool. Yeah. Here's one that I've done before. At what point is it okay to have the big, bad, evil guy convince one of your henchmen or hirelings to turn on the party?
Oh, whenever.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want that to be a go-to all the time once the players have that?
It needs to be something very... And I think you ought to, like, try to feed it into a natural interaction, meaning he should make comments like maybe your henchman would start to doubt the different things you're doing. Like, you know, you said, we're going to go help this town out even though they're a rival because they're being attacked by the undead army. And the henchman's like, who cares? Let them kill them. These other villagers have not been our friends for years. And your pal was like, that would be the right thing to do, and we're doing it. And he's like, okay, boss. And then a couple of times, you could find your henchman maybe has a slightly different alignment, or maybe his personality is just like, he's starting to disagree with what your boss is doing as things become more important in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then a big bad guy could maybe notice that. Now, how he would notice that, I don't know. But you know, if the henchman was, you know, you were famous because of you and your henchman, or like Josh said, his character in Deadlands and that robot that he had, if he became well known, that robot's a significant thing. So maybe an evil mad scientist says, you know what? I can't really get to Josh's character, Martinson's character. So I'm going to try to get to him through his robot and try to control that thing.
Right.
And try to set up a situation where I can put a little program inside of it and make it turn on him. Yeah, I guess that'd be okay as long as you didn't overdo it.
Right. So yeah, it would be a, it probably wouldn't be a, hey, all of your henchmen happen to be evil.
Yeah.
Day one.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you're sleeping and all of a sudden you wake up and you see two arrows strung in the bow right in your face.
Yeah.
And your ranger's like, sorry, cleric, pow. That would be like, where'd that come from? That'd be pretty weird.
But, and then depends on the setting, too. If it's a pretty dark setting,
right?
You know, there, you might have to worry about that on a constant basis. You might have things set up in the game world. It doesn't have to be rules that do this. It can just be something part of the setting.
Right.
When you get to a particular level, you have a kind of a magical contract that your henchmen sign on to, a loyalty type thing.
Right.
That prevents them from
doing that.
Like
a geas, a back, you know, some sort of a geas thing that says you can't turn on me. If you do, you'll have racking pain and fall to the ground or whatever.
Right. It would be some kind of voluntary contract that both people can leave whenever. But while the contract is in force, if you turn on me, bad news for you.
Right. It's going to suck bad. I did a quick look through the additions for henchmen. And I was intrigued that they talk quite a bit about in book one of OD&D of charming monsters and having charmed monsters as henchmen. Henchmen can be henchmen. You're not paying them. Maybe you'd feed them. Could that turn into a mutually beneficial arrangement? If you're so inclined, could you somehow tame a Bulette to where if you feed him enough, you can kind of pet him? And
I would think that they would need to have a certain level of intelligence.
Right.
Or a disposition. And this would be in your game world.
Yeah.
It's the different versions of D&D, you know, a lot of monster descriptions don't get into enough detail for you to determine whether or not they would be good candidates.
Yeah.
Necessarily. There might be some. And there's some iconic ones, like wolves are often ranger pets. So why couldn't anybody attract an equivalent type creature to be
there? That might be a stretch. Hard man, a pet nine flare. It seems that in second edition and first, they were very similar, though they spelled out in second, I noticed, that as you got to a certain level as a paladin, you would have these different followers. And I don't know if it was a role you had to make. I think you had to make a special role on the table, and you could get a really unique follower, like a hippogriff, that could become your mount.
The mounts were often the ones where you get creatures.
Yeah. Flint says, what would the difference be between pets, henchmen, and familiars? Yeah, I feel like a familiar is a magical being that's bound to you in some arcane way. So he's not really free to kind of do whatever he wants. He is familiar to you. I feel like pets, they probably, if you treat them well and you understand their, you know, ecology and stuff, you probably could just make them basically like dogs, you know. Not all animals would be like that. Certain monsters might have that quality where they could attach themselves to something they might would think is food otherwise. So, and henchmen would be more something like NPCs, true NPC player character type things. Now,
pets are a different category.
Yeah, but they're, I think they can be, I see how you could connect a lot of this together.
Yeah.
Now, third edition threw things in a curveball. Third edition, they had hirelings, but you kind of had to have the leadership feat to get what they called a cohort. That was your henchman in third.
Right.
And I remember when that first was out, that was one of the first feats I disallowed.
Right.
And because there was some super cheese you could do with some of those leadership feats.
If you could finagle it so that it's only, normally it's like they're four, I think they're like four levels behind, but you could make it to where they were one level behind.
Yes.
And that could, and they're just another PC. They're the
really,
same. They do follow all the PC rules.
Yeah.
So you could throw things out of whack with how third edition is put together.
Yeah. Cal says, pets and familiars don't have a class. Henchmen have a class most of the time. That's fair.
Right.
But they can fill similar roles. I could see someone having getting a griffin mount at seventh level and slowly learning how to deal with it, and it becomes a real ally, you know, because mm-hmm. you feed it and you treat it well, you know how to treat it and you understand the griffin. Maybe you're a ranger and you can, you know, maybe right. talk to it even, you know, and it's a,
sure.
it's a thing that could be pretty valuable. I already mentioned fourth edition. I didn't really look into, because honestly, I don't care. I don't think they had much in the way of henchmen. If somebody has played fourth edition and knows about their henchmen, let me know. They had some hirelings. And fifth had a lot of description, two or three pages in the DMG. But honestly, loyalty scores were optional. Hirelings were discussed more than others. They didn't do much with you having a henchman. They didn't really use that language, though. They said NPC party members, so I guess that's a possibility.
Yeah, I would imagine with a lot of the more modern games,
yeah.
having something that is a henchman
uh-huh. that's
nearly at the level of the PCs, if all the characters in the party had one,
uh-huh.
it could really throw off the mechanics.
Yeah, I mean, if you got a party of 10 characters or 5 characters and five characters like one level lower. Flint says Tasha's, I guess that's Tasha's book. It's a book for 5e, has sidekicks, I think. Yeah. Now, sidekicks makes perfect sense in the superhero game.
Right.
And I could see
how. I think one of the only problems that comes in with a lot of this is if you don't have them approach the character's power level on some to some degree, then
yes.
maybe they don't have the breadth of abilities, but the abilities that they do possess need to be close to on par.
Yeah, they should probably.
They're going to be useless.
The fighter henchman should be able to hit, maybe not as well as your main fighter in your group, but he shouldn't be so far behind that he misses the orcs most of the time. I mean, if you're eighth level, a second level henchman's not really going to help you very much.
Right.
You know, but a seventh level henchman or sixth level henchman should be able to attack decently well. And if you get him outfitted with his minor magical weapon or minor magical armor, the next thing you know, he's halfway decent.
Right.
But he's not going to be the PC guy running around with the +3 flaming sword and stuff like that. No. Yeah. I guess for me, I think it's something that I've, since the Rangers experience we've had with OSE, I want to include them a little more as options. I don't want them
right.
to run rampant through the campaign,
right.
but I'd like them to be part of as an option for players that are interested. You were interested. Nobody else really was.
Right. And that's the way it's going to be in a lot of tables,
mm-hmm.
is you're going to have some of the players them and some of the players that don't want to don't. So you probably don't have to worry about the whole party having them for everybody at the
no.
table. But even if you have the one, though,
yeah.
you still, as a DM, you have to at least acknowledge that having them is going to change the power dynamic to some degree.
To some degree. The party is going to be bumped up if he's an appropriately helpful NPC. Flint says he can see how henchmen could come in handy for those into solo play. Yeah, if you're playing fully by yourself, henchmen might be required, or multiple characters. And Patrick Demo says 13th Age did animal companions okay. I'd modify the rules to fit humanoids. Yeah, you could. 13th Age is pretty malleable like that. Joe had a guy. Who is your dude that you have for your 8th level character? You have one right now. Joe's a henchman fanatic. What's his name? Rory.
Rory, yeah.
Rory, yeah. You've used a couple of
We just used the uses the same stats as the skeletal companions for the necromancer.
Oh, cool.
Class, so those rules. And, I mean, he's not an undead, but he has the same, I mean.
And when he gets knocked to zero, he's not dead. He's just out of the fight.
He runs off.
Runs off, yeah. Okay. And he helps a little. He gives, you know.
He's usually a potion delivery system.
Yeah.
For healing.
Yeah. Right. Right. True. Anything else you want to talk about with hirelings? Anything crossing your mind you think would be groovy?
No, I just think that they're fun. They can be a fun part of your game.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you're still hanging around, we will suggest that you subscribe. Share and like the show wherever you catch it. Tell your friends all about it. You know, we always like it when you tell people about it. The show has been growing slowly again. I don't know where we at number-wise, Joe.
The last I looked, we were still 462, 463, something like that. Okay.
All right. So I know we talked about doing little shorts and stuff. I have several ideas. I jotted some down this week. I haven't got to it. So, but yeah, thanks, Flint. Hit the like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Notifications so you know when Joe and I are here talking our smack here on YouTube. So, all right. Let's go into the second and last segment for tonight. I had just one that I thought it could be long, it could be short, but I kind of wanted to ask this. I'm not diving too deep into this. I want to talk about story mechanics that are used in TTRPGs. Things that we tend to poo-poo on, like bennies, re-rolls, free-form narrative control, hero points, and the dreaded fail forward and success with a cost and things like that.
Okay, yeah. So a lot
I
of
don't
these
think they're always can, bad.
No, a lot of these mechanics came out. They were less story related and more. Well, it might be story related from a point of view. It was more of keeping the game moving forward. Instead of, oh, your character died. Now you need a new character. Now we need to stop what we're doing so you can make a character. And then right. Somehow we're going to shoehorn that character into what we're doing. And it's jarring for people, throws them out of immersion or whatever weak sauce that they have to say about that. Yeah. But I even liked hero points less from a, not even at all from a story point of view, but more from a,
extra resource.
Well, it's a resource that you can use to mitigate the vagaries of dice rolling.
Yes.
Right. So,
maybe mitigate
all the stuff. Right. You planned everything.
Yeah.
And you rolled a one.
Right.
And that's really the only problem. It's not a problem making choices or anything. You just happen to blow your roll. Yep. And I've always hated that because, you know, it sucks. But yeah, it is part of the game.
Correct. And if you take it away, if you have so many of those that the failure is taken away, I think in games like 13th Age, I would say Savage Worlds, but it's so swingy. Sometimes you can feel like you're getting all this extra stuff from your bennies, but usually that's your hit point pool. So you have to be careful how you burn through those bennies in a Savage Worlds game.
Right.
But I think it can, if it's too easy. Like I think the relationship points in 13th Age are so vague, they can really cause a lot of just, you know, it's the win button, it's the save your butt button.
Hero points in D&D were kind of introduced in third edition, they had, I think it was part of the campaign handbook or something. And with the power creep that third edition brought in,
oh my,
it was overkill.
It was definitely overkill.
Using it in the, like, say, first edition, especially where it was very deadly, I think would have less impact. So with 13th Age, the whole game is kind of geared for the players to win.
I think 13th Age really, and I don't think they make any bones about it. They don't say it explicitly, but they're just built to that. And Joe and I have rolled, I've gotten a little sour on 13th Age. It's still in my top five or six games to play because it's so quick to pick up. David Gould makes a comment. He says, it's part of the game, but I wonder how many GMs call for a roll if no roll is needed. Yeah, sometimes that's true as well. Why would you have to roll to open a door that's not stuck?
Right.
You know, or
anything that's routine or mundane or has no consequence one way or the other.
Yeah.
No need to roll.
Yeah. And Patrick Demo says he thinks relationship points in 13th Age is the most abused mechanic in the TTRPG existence. Yeah, it really is. even our group of players can be really bad about it. I love some guys, but some just go crazy with them. And the truth is, I don't knock them because you have it. And in desperate times, I mean, as a player, like, well, let's see if I can bull crap this. It's very few players. I could probably list them out that when I say, you know, you're going to have to make a check based upon your knowledge of this tower, this well-known tower, no, this ancient tower set on this, you know, island. And Joe's like, well, I was a prison guard one time, and I had to know about towers because I guarded towers, you know. And Joe's not the type to do that. He would be like, Joe, do you have any background that would help you? He's like, nope. He'd just say no. He'd look at himself. He would make the decision himself. I don't think we have enough players that are willing to say, you know, my background, it's kind of goofy and a stretch for my background to apply here. Right. I shouldn't know that about that weird ancient tower off on some island. And we get a lot of players that'll just, well, I have a background in this, and I'm a librarian, so I know of all things. You know, that's just, that's one of, I think that's both a flaw in the players and a flaw in the game, that the game's yeah. too easy to exploit.
Now, if, let's say, at some point in the campaign, mm-hmm. that librarians, that's more of a one, what's that mechanic where you got one thing special about you?
One unique thing,
or your background is librarian. Let's say they had a way to make that background more powerful, and you went from being just, I was some random librarian to becoming yeah. the most librarian that ever librarian.
Cool. Right.
Oh, she's looking now.
Okay. A little bit.
Anyway.
Yeah. Good girl. So it'd be one thing if you, like I said, if you're just some random librarian, it's okay. So you know the Dewey Decimal System, and you probably read a few books.
Right.
And it doesn't mean you know every book and what every book says and have a eidetic memory so that you can just recall everything.
Yeah. And just because you're a librarian doesn't mean that you have any arcane knowledge whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so if something is esoteric in terms of the arcane realm, you've probably never even heard of such a thing. Just means you can read and you can probably write, and you probably understand how to organize books, and you probably would be able to find where a book would most likely be.
If you're
in that tower, you'd be like, hey, this looks like it's organized by this system. Make a roll. Yep, you can tell the organizational strategy to his books. You can find it.
Or no, hey, I have heard about the great arcane library of the main city in Conan the Library.
Yeah, exactly.
The library.
Yeah.
That's more of a, those kind of mechanics are better for leading to more adventure rather than just short-circuiting a knowledge check.
I'm not fully against like fail forward mechanics that can be different than rerolls and hero points, where like you make a check but you fail. And so what that means is we talked about it before, if you're trying to unlock a door, maybe you fail, so you unlock it but you set off the trap, or you unlock it and maybe you make so much noise the creatures that are beyond the door hear you. But if you make a really good check, if you make it with ease, then maybe, just maybe, you know, you super success, maybe you open it real quietly and you sneak in. That can be okay, but having no failure option at all, that kind of bugs me.
Right.
It doesn't have to be binary, right? Where it's just, you know, success or failure. But I'd like it to have
some degrees in there.
But you should have failure. It should be a thing that can happen.
Right.
Yeah, David Will disagrees with me. He doesn't like that.
I've never, just the idea, fail forward. No, that's not failure.
No, I get it. I get it. Yeah, I mean, I fail you, David. He says, you fail to pick the lock. Well, you failed. Find another way. Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it. But I could see a game maybe where you could have a failure window rather than like, maybe you fail by three or less. So something good happens for you, something promising, but with a cost. So,
and not every success failure situation needs to have that.
No, some can be binary. You must crack the code of the long dead Ark Lich to be able to get to his treasure. Well, I think it's this. You didn't crack the code, fail.
Right.
Yeah, there's only one way to do it. There's no getting close. There's no maybe. Yeah, you failed to pick the lock. You broke it. That could be a consequence. You fail bad enough. You roll a one, right? I think games like, and I've not played it much, but I was talking with one of our friends, Halcyon was actually over at the house this week. and he was talking about his, he's a pretty big fan of the Star Wars system. What's the one with the crazy dice? I know you don't care for that much. What's it called?
I don't know the different
Force and Destiny. And then anyway, the Genesis version of Star Wars and all those dice, how they can kind of tell a story. And like, you know, you roll this many and you, yeah, you got this done, but you rolled too many dark side points. So the evil Jedi hurt. Edge of the Empire, that's one of them. There's three of them, yeah. Genesis, thank you, Patrick. That's the name of the game system. It's not just the goofy dice, but I do like the idea of being able to make even successes interesting. But nothing stops you from doing it as a DM anyway.
Right.
You could have the player roll a success and you could roll, flip a coin or roll a die and say, hey, if I roll, you know, he's trying to smooth talk the princess. And so he just wants to get past her to get in the room to be able to look for the widget he's trying to find, something that's hidden in her room. And so then I roll, you succeed, and I'll say, hey, if I roll one, two, or three, then that means, yeah, he gets by her, but he does a too good of a job, and she won't leave him alone. She's all up in his face and, you know, pawing him and saying, oh, I love you, you know, all this stuff. He can't get time to search, you know, subtly around the room if that's what he wanted to do. So you could put a monkey wrench in that. But I think a DM can do that with dice. He can do that just to make the encounter interesting.
I think where some of this stuff can be helpful is not every time you sit down to play or every moment of the game that you have sat down at, you're at your best and most creative.
Right.
So when you have a mechanic, can be an aid, but it doesn't have to be a constricting thing where you always have to use it. So if you want to have the various degrees of success, and maybe you just have an inkling that this room, I want something interesting to happen, then you pull up this this thing where different numbers on the dice can have different effects. So you roll all sixes in a D6 game, or you roll a maximum result or something like that, or whatever you have in mind.
Right.
You can use that at times. It doesn't have to be every time.
Right.
And people, when you have the idea of a varying success range, it can be, probably for some DMs, it can be frustrating that they might have to think of that kind of stuff up on the fly.
Yeah.
So this could be...
Well, a complication in success with a complication.
Yeah. What kind of complication? I don't know.
Maybe it could be this. It could be that. Well, I can't think of in the middle of a fight. I'm not sure what to do.
Yeah. And sometimes you're on it and you can, and sometimes you can't. So maybe use those kind of things when you're not at your best, and maybe you're tired, and you just, but you still want to have interesting things happen.
Grizzly Beardo, welcome. I'm not sure if I've seen your name before, but welcome to the show. The only game I thought was appropriate to always fail forward was in Gumshoe's Trail of Cthulhu. It's a mystery game. If you fail to find all the clues and there is no game, I mean, you could say that as long as there's a consequence. I mean, if it's like, well, I failed, doesn't matter, we got to get the clue anyway, then I'm not so much for it. But if it's failed, making the next encounter much tougher because you failed, even though you get the clue, okay, in a mystery game.
Yeah, okay. Because in that version of the game, you must find all clues to go forward.
Yeah. I have done that before. David Gill says he's played in a... I have played with more than one GM that would bank failures to introduce complications later when he wouldn't think of something at the time. Yeah, I mean, that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. And Iron Man says Horde Wars has the conditional bonus that players can give each other. I don't recall that. Do you, Joe?
It rings a bell, but I don't know.
Huh. I don't remember that at all, Iron Man, but thanks. I'll have to look for that.
I have to look that up.
Yeah.
Maybe that's some kind of assist mechanic.
Yeah. I wonder if I could have assisted you last Friday when I was face down and pulled my own blood.
That would be a hard one to explain.
Use flare balloon. Yeah, I don't know how to explain.
You have a little flag you have up waving at your head. Go. Go. Durkan, go.
Go, Durkan. Kill that dragon all by yourself. You're doing great, dude. Yeah, I think a light touch.
Our man explains.
Oh.
If you don't take an action, you can instead give a +2 bonus to another character. That like sounds like an assist type rule.
Yeah, aid another. Like in
that's 30. Fine.
Yeah, that's
especially
cool.
If you can game it. If you don't have a requisite skill to cover a situation, you can just say, I'm helping him out.
Or if you have a...
Because you don't want to roll.
Yeah, or what if you have a don't have a weapon that'll affect a monster? Nobody has a silver weapon. But one of the fighters hits really hard because he has a really cool ability like lunge or something. You're like, dude, I'm going to try to set this monster up by weaving in, getting in front of him, trying to open up to one of his like vital spots.
Yeah, I have to look that up in the book to see how that works.
I will too. I don't recall that. Well, now that he mentioned it, it does sound like something DM Blackwall has mentioned before. But
yeah, it rings the bell.
Yeah.
And, that's good because it's just not a pool of resources that you draw upon to get that +2. Somebody has to give up their action.
Yes.
So I can see that being a bit more manageable than a whole other system of things.
I think these kind of story mechanics, I think there's a place for them in many games. I just think you have to use them judiciously. And I would be more inclined to, I'd be inclined to keep that behind the screen a lot of times.
Sure.
As just a GM option, if you want to give the players a little bit of wiggle room. Like, David Will says he's planning on having some scaled failed and successes in his next edition of Dungeons and Delvers. I think there's advantage. It can be useful. I think a lot of games overdo it. I don't know much about Gumshoe, Mr. Grizzly Beardo, but being a mystery game, I can see it.
It's a different kind of game.
With
it being a mystery game.
Yeah.
We're comparing it to a more adventure game. It's probably not a good comparison to make.
Yeah. No. Martin says, so you're saying when Randy is laying down dying, he can give... No, I can't because I don't have an action to do.
Well, we're trying to say that.
We're trying. Yeah. We're hoping DM Black
probably incorrect
this because that would make me more useful.
It would.
I'm the cleric that could heal if I was alive.
Right.
That's the kind of cleric.
What you have to do is give up your action to continue bleeding, so you don't have to bleed that way.
Well, I should just give up my action to live and just move back away from fights.
Right.
Move further away. I spend my action.
Homer Simpson thing.
I spend my action
to the hedge.
Yeah. I spend my action living.
Yes.
It's an action, not a maneuver. Good.
Okay.
Yeah, maneuver would be too sweet. That'd be way too good. All right. Anything else you want to say about story mechanics like that? We've talked about them off and on. I don't know what else I got to say about them.
You might
got some comments. Joe's good for a comment or two every now and again.
Every now and again.
Don't let it go to his head, though.
So someone mentioned here, so I can find it. So David Will says that I play with more than one GM that would bank failures. So, like you're saying, behind the screen. That's a behind the screen thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Bank failures to introduce complications later when you could think of something, couldn't think of something at the time. And I know you might have pointed this out a little earlier.
Maybe.
But that's a good way to keep it behind the screen. So you're not necessarily introducing or having extra mechanics and keeping the table play coherent.
Right. I mean, if it's something that's important, I don't think that's not a wrong thing to do. I mean, if the players make enough mistakes going through the dungeon, the adventure, there should be consequences. You know, if they're loud 3 or 4 times banging through the lich's mausoleum, something should happen. Right. And that's okay if you bank and track and say, I'm not sure what he would do about it. Maybe he would do this. Maybe he would do that. But Joe just went silent on me. I think he got a... Is that a big bowl of food? Popcorn. Oh, popcorn for Joe.
Popcorn.
She didn't make enough for everybody, dude. What's
up with that? Well, I can't exactly stick this through, here you know.
Throw it in my mouth hole.
It doesn't work that way.
That was good. Fair enough. Okay. Well,
Oh, and the other thing I'm going to say is, if hero points, narrative control,
it's
something that makes your table work better and you guys have fun with it, do it.
I was enamored of narrative control for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Where you let the players, you know, you're in a bar fight and the player goes, I reach behind the bar and I grab a mug for beer that's glass and I hit it over the guy's head without asking the DM, is there a mug for beer behind the bar? I don't mind a little bit of that, but as we've seen, it can get out of control. I think players can, you know, you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. Too much control the narrative and it gets a little crazy.
Right, right. Because in a situation like that, you're in a bar.
Uh-huh.
You're in a tavern. There's going to be ale floating around. It would be kind of dickish for the DM to say, yeah, there's no beer anywhere near you in a bar.
And you don't need to, yeah, you don't need to ask my permission for that to exist. Right, right. I mean, but I could say no.
You know, there's this two-handed +5 sword that just happens to be laying here.
Yes.
And I'm going to use it.
Right. That's a little too much control.
Right. So narrative control is good when it's moderated.
I agree. And it's only valuable, and the problem with it built into the game system is I don't think it's always appropriate for all players. So I lost you.
If you make it something that the players must do,
mm-hmm.
I can see some people saying, yeah, it's good for them. It'll bring them out of their shell and make them, you know, engage and stuff like that.
Maybe.
But some players are like, I'm here to roll dice and take treasure, you right. know, and you should know that about your player.
Mage is musing. Welcome. Long time no see in the chat. Player, I reach for the shotgun behind the bar. DM, this is D&D. There's no shotguns. Player, F you. I'm a 4D player, and you're cramping my role play.
Right, right. Well, it's like back in the day when people were trying to make machine gun illusions.
Oh, I told that story, didn't it, with my Crinscape adventure at Gen Con?
Right, right, right. Oh, essentially, it's that thing. I'm going to make an illusion of a machine gun, and it's going to kill everybody. And you don't know what a machine gun is.
How could you even do that?
Right, right.
And if you know, why would they know?
Right.
He's pointing a giant wand at me, and it's making loud noises. I mean, you wouldn't see the bullets.
Our man says, I had a player that always called it a two-handled sword. That would be weird.
It's been handled by two people.
Multi-bladed swords are bad enough, but a sword with more than one
two handle. Two handles? That'd be weird. Be like scissors that don't actually scissor.
Right. Let's make this harder to use.
I'm going to put a two-handled sword in the next game I run. That is awesome. +5 Vorpal. Two-handled. You and your friend can use them. Over here. No, I don't want to. No, I want to use it. That would be good.
Right. So, yeah, narrative control. I mean, hero points is one thing. But narrative control spread around can get chaotic.
It can. We've seen it in play in 13th Age become just a little bit off. Savage Worlds has it now in the Suede Edition. You can use a Benny to take some amount of narrative control, but it's up to the DM. So the DM can always put a kibosh on how much you can do. There's, like I said, there's certain players in our group I would trust. Like, I wouldn't worry if Joe took narrative control because I know he's not going to go, I found a staff of power and a sword +5 and 10 million gold pieces, and I just take it and go home and win the game.
Yeah, I'm also not going to do something crazy like there's an established fact about the campaign world, and then I'm going to take narrative control and just say, no, that's not the case.
Right. All red dragons are evil. Ah, but this one in the world is actually lawful good, and he's my friend since childhood.
Okay, I'm okay with one-offs. It's when people say, well, all red dragons are chaotic evil, except this whole group of red dragons over here.
Right.
And there's a whole culture of red dragons that are good.
But if you decide it, I have a problem.
Yeah.
Especially my plan was for this dragon to kill you guys. So, right. Yeah. Yeah, Grizzly Beardo says the same thing. He says, in his Savage Worlds game, I've rarely had to throw the Benny back. The idea usually works. It usually does. I think it can. True. He says his players tend to forget. My players, they tend to hoard their Bennies because for the very last fight, so they can make their extra hit points, vigor checks. And I call them hit points, but they're making vigor rolls to save their bacon or to put the whammy on the big bad guy. That's what they tend to do.
Right. The the Bennies are hard to come by.
They are.
In Savage Worlds.
Sometimes I don't think I give them out enough, but other times I think I do. I don't know.
So it's when it's a subjective thing that the DM says, yeah, I kind of like that, so I'm going to give you one. Rather than a mechanical thing where you always get a return if a certain thing happens, like rolling, maxing out your die or whatever it might be for your game system, rolling a natural 20 in a D&D setting. If it's a subjective thing, a DM can often forget. It's not necessarily consistent.
Yeah.
And you can't count on them. So you're going to hoard them for your rerolls. You're not necessarily going to. And taking narrative control isn't always as big of a deal.
No. I think with Benny, sometimes what I'll forget is players will role play their, if you role play your hindrances, it used to be they would suggest, at least in the Adventure Edition, I think they did through all the editions, that if a player role plays his hindrance in such a way that it puts him in a difficult spot, he should get a Benny. Not just, I'm a drunk, so I'm going to go get a drink. Yeah, but you're in town. Nothing's going to bother you. It doesn't mean anything. But hey, we're trying to go figure this thing out. So, wait a minute. First, I got to get drunk first. We don't want you to get drunk. You'll ruin everything. And then you might like, that might make sense. Grizzly Beardo says he's apologizes to Legion of Myth. He used the B word. I think Legion doesn't like Bennies, but I wonder if he doesn't like Bennies as rerolls or he doesn't like it as a mechanic for.
He doesn't like it as a word.
Oh, really?
The name of it is silly. It's probably a little, it's not serious. Makes the game seem less serious.
I have to admit that when I first heard it, I kind of agree with him. It sounded stupid. Hmm. Bennies. What do you mean, Bennies? And I read it in the book. I'm like, what are you talking about, Bennies?
It's a bit whimsical.
It is a bit whimsical. And we hate whimsy. Grizzly says he absolutely has to use positive reinforcement to get some of his players to role play. There's Legion. Legion right. Misses. Benny sounds like a wannabe hipster. Just call it benefits or GTFO. Yeah. Anyway, well, man, I think we're getting near the end today. Did you have any updates on Big Geek Emporium? Anything cool going on for Big Geek Emporium right now?
I didn't see any. We had somebody. No, that was a couple weeks ago. I don't think we had any new vendors or anything like that.
Okay. I don't know if we have any specials going on. Big Geek Con 2, that's important. It's still a bit away, September 20th through the 22nd. Only $30 for the whole weekend. Children 13 plus have to pay for a badge, but your kids have to be with you. It'll be at the Four Point Sheraton. I don't think we have many tickets sold yet. I'm not too worried. Hopefully we'll have a big rush near the last month or two. But it's going to be our second Big Geek Con. I expect a lot of good things. I have a friend, Joe. I'll announce this now.
No, you don't.
I know. It's hard to believe that I have a friend. Well, a friend of ours. I won't give his name away. I'll tell you off air because I'm going to give him a little props. He has 3D printed about 50 really cool things for us.
Oh, cool.
Just because he heard about what we're up to. And I'll tell you, he's a blast from the past, one of our high school buddies. So,
awesome.
He's done it. Hold on a second, dude. Give me a second. I want to show you something.
So, Patty's Parlor, is it Patty's Parlor? Wretched just released a new book. Let's see. I was just looking to see what it might be. Is that the Wretched Bestiary? Was that the most recent one? That's the most recent one that comes up in the latest and greatest. Because I do remember something over the weekend, perhaps. Did they release over the weekend, or was it more recent than that?
Okay.
Dig this. Yeah, they're in, you know, of course, who said it? Cal says, oh, that's awesome.
That is
Cal
a 3D printed dragon.
Right. Cal says, when does Wretched not release a new book? They are very prolific.
They're unbelievable, man. Those, what's her name? Sylvia and Miguel? They are unreal, dude.
Yeah.
Look always at this, people. This is going to be something that's going to be given away at Big Geek Con. It is about 8-9 inches long. It would be the equivalent of a large dragon, maybe close to huge. It could be painted. I'll be giving this away. I may even see if Patrick would consider donating a paint job to this bad boy if I paid for the paints. I may have mentioned to him earlier. But, yeah, that's one really of many cool things we're going to have. We've got some other little free gift ideas and stuff.
It would be cool to be able to have a 3D printer like that. I think that's a resin one. It doesn't have, like, the horizontal lines on it, does it?
Let me look.
It looks like
It looks pretty sweet.
So it's probably a resin printer.
Yeah. And
they can get pricey, especially for that. Did it all come like that? Did you have to glue anything together?
No glue. It came as one figure.
Yeah, so he has a pretty decent sized printer.
I don't think he's doing it for us, but he said he's going to try another size bigger, about like this. But it looks fabulous. He makes toys for his grandkids, and Cal volunteered to paint it. So, all right, yeah, I would be looking Cal to paint it as something to give away, not for you to have. Though I'd be happy for you to have one. Maybe if I get another one, I could pay you with a dragon. But Patrick, he might have the time. But Patrick's doing a lot of stuff for me right now.
He might be saying if you mail him one, he'll paint it and then mail it back. He might. That might be what he means.
I hope so, because I really need it. Don't keep it. But I've seen Cal's paint jobs on Facebook, dude. Homie's got skills. He and Patrick both are excellent. So it just depends on who's busy. Wow. Dig this. Martinson says, John A., a friend of ours, is got a 3D printer, and he's making him a Godzilla for a specific Rim game at Big Geek Con 2. I will, absolutely. I would pay the postage, Cal. You can count on it, brother. Both directions. I may take you up on it. Depends on what Patrick's got going on. But, yeah, that'll be Big Geek Con, and it's going to be at the Four Points by Sheraton in Saginaw. You can get tickets on Tabletop Events. Just seek out Big Geek Con 2. And you can't beat $30, man.
No.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And you get a game with us, man. And some of the really cool daddios on the chat. So Patrick will be there. Martinson will be there. I'm pretty sure that a few others, more than a few others. I know Flady's working on getting there. So
hopefully Flady will make it again.
Yeah, but that's not all. He's sending. I've got several things that I may end up giving away. We have the little giveaway tables, and we'll do that again.
So. Yeah, we had a big giveaway. Everybody was really, really like that, except for me, because I didn't get anything.
You didn't get nothing? Did I get something? No, I don't think I got.
No, anything. We don't participate.
I was going to say I can't do it. That would feel like insider trading.
Yourself. Yeah.
Oh, look at me! I won the dragon. How nice. Yeah, that'd be pretty cheeseballish. I love last year. A lot of the kids won the minis, and that was cool to see.
Now, if you do a food giveaway, I'm going to break the rule.
Especially if it's good food. Chili. Make awesome chili, and Joe will break the rule.
Yeah.
I said, how did all these tickets from Joe get in here? He goes, never mind. I'll take the pot.
I want all the chili.
Yeah, Flady's struggling, man. We want you to be there, brother. I understand. But, man, I need an Indian food guy. Maybe Mac Thompson will like Indian food. I hope.
I like Indian food that's not hot.
Oh, there is some of that. You could eat some of it. A lot of it's pretty spicy, at least the stuff I've had. Oh, anyway, we probably should scoot on out of here. What do you think?
Sounds good.
So if you want to support the show, you got all the links and stuff in the show notes. You'll have it there. You can give us money in all several places. You can just visit Big Geek Emporium and buy something cool for yourself. So
or get any of the free stuff they have there.
Patrick, my boy. He likes Indian food. Anyway, I guess we're done. This is Randy.
And this is Joe.
And remember, guys, can't be big like us. And be geeks like this.